This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. On today's edition of the show, we're taking a reprieve from coverage of the coronavirus pandemic to catch up with Erica and Blair Waters. They're the mother-daughter team behind the podcast Cool Dead Women, which features the untold stories of remarkable women in history in a mission to, quote, rescue these women's lives from oblivion and keep their stories, contributions, and accomplishments from being lost to history. We first spoke with Erica and Blair Waters on this show back in 2018, about a month after the first episode premiered on the Ms. Magazine blog. They've been putting out regular episodes ever since that are available through Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Erica Waters is Professor Emeritus at the University of the Virgin Islands in St. Croix. She was the founding editor of the university's literary magazine, Caribbean Writer, and edited collections of fiction, poetry, literary criticism, and drama. She earned her PhD in postcolonial literature, specializing in recovery research and women's literature. She's a past recipient of National Endowment for the Humanities grants and was a Fulbright scholar to Finland. She's written books about Maine and the Virgin Islands, along with articles and reviews for such publications as The Chronicle of Higher Education, World Literature Today, and The Women's Review of Books, among others. She first appeared on WGCU's Gulf Coast Live in 2016 for a conversation about her book, Discovering Old Florida, A Guide to Vintage South and Central Florida. Dr. Waters has been teaching writing and literature at the Renaissance Academy of Florida Gulf Coast University and has written for the Marco Island Historical Society. Dr. Waters, welcome back to Gulf Coast Life.
Hi, thank you. Nice to be here.
And co-host of the podcast, Blair Waters, grew up on St. Croix and is now a Brooklyn-based film director. Her work has been featured on MTV Hits of the Week and in the New York Times and part of Clio Award-winning campaigns. She also works as a music journalist for national publications such as Nylon and has been an internationally charting solo artist herself. She produced and directed her first short film on Marco Island titled Princess Rita a couple years ago. Blair Waters, welcome back. Great to reconnect with you.
You too. Oops, I dropped the phone.
All right. And to engage with us and your fellow listeners about this conversation or any of our shows, find us on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Now, before we get into highlighting the women featured in some recent episodes of the podcast, remind us again about how the two of you initially came up with the concept and decided to produce this podcast together.
Well, we were driving and listening to Blossom Dearie, which has long been my mother's favorite musician. Have you heard of Blossom Dearie?
Sure.
Okay, oh, well, that makes...
Jazz, he's a jazz person.
Oh, you are a jazz person. Yeah, well, like, no one ever, like, knows who she is, but, like, we both love her, and we wanted to make more people know about her, and we've both always really been into, like...
obscure women.
Yeah.
So that's what the genesis was, really, that we would tell people about women who deserve to be better known.
And it has been a slog making a podcast with her in a good way. But no, it's been really fun and kind of like, it's an interesting bonding experience. favorite idea for people in quarantine.
We've been putting out 13 episodes now. I don't know if you knew that we've got that many out. But we changed the new series. So we're in our second series and we changed it slightly. It's more conversational now. Before it was formal, I would read something and then she would read something. But now we read. I tell a story and she comments and vice versa. And
so it's a lot more conversational.
Yeah, and I think listeners can get to know us better. we're much more honest about our feelings. Like we kind of made a note that we were recording in bathrooms. And so we said that Cool Dead Women was recorded in bathrooms all across America.
No, I have noticed it's a lot more conversational. When I'm listening to you guys in my car, it just kind of feels like maybe you're in the back seat telling me stories rather than listening
nice
to like a book
what
report.
You don't know is we are.
We are in your back seat.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Blair, I know New York is home for you, and, you know, amid the coronavirus pandemic, you're sheltering with mom. when did you decide to get out of the city? We'll get into the show in just a minute. I'm just wondering if you could contrast for us what sort of sheltering at home in a major metropolitan center like New York is compared to where you are now.
Well, it wasn't really a choice. My mom made me come home. Like, you did. You told, she did. And so she basically told me I had to go. And so, it was getting really scary. And I also have an adorable dog. And that's what was actually the hardest part, was that walking the dog was, and doing any kind of basic exercise or like anything in New York is just so much harder because you have to touch so many surfaces all the time. And so it's just been exponentially easier being here physically.
Yeah,
I don't know, mentally.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. Well, can you contrast what, or not contrast, but I mean, has it been easier doing the podcast amid the pandemic, given that you and your mom are physically together? I imagine that ordinarily you're in different parts of the country when you record.
No,
these.
Not really. Actually, we've always scheduled the podcast to be together. We tried to do it once in two separate locations, but it really didn't work. So that's why we say bathrooms across America. Wherever we can get together in hotel rooms or wherever, we do it there. So
yeah, we tend to record like a lot at once. So we'll record like a bunch at one time and then like stick them out like over the
Oh, okay. Well, let's go ahead and talk about this month's installment of the podcast featuring author Marjorie Kinnan Rawlings, perhaps best known for authoring the book The Yearling, which I think probably most of us read in school. Would you consider her a pioneer in the world of young adult fiction? Is that what she was even intending to do with her writing?
Well, she really wasn't intending to write a young adult novel. That's what she said, but that's how it turned out. But, you know, I was interested that people today aren't reading The Yearling. I did some, you know, sort of informal surveys, and it's not as popular as it once was, which interesting to me. I don't quite know why, but it was translated into like 40 different languages and read all over the world. And so it had appeal to both young adults and adults.
And how did she first come to live in Florida and I guess what is now the Ocala Wildlife Refuge?
Yes. She really wanted adventure. She had married, she had been an English major in the Midwest, and she and her husband both wanted adventure. And they looked at this farm, a 72-acre farm near Gainesville. It's now part, as you said, near Ocala. And they took a trip and they looked at it and they bought it. And it was an orange grove and they tried to run the orange grove. And meanwhile, of course, she was writing all the time. She was very, very dedicated to her craft as a writer. We visited Cross Creek, her home. It's so extraordinary. It's like a time capsule of the 1930s life. And I was mesmerized.
She really was like, she will not stop talking about it.
I really loved it. So she moved to this orange grove. I mean, she'd had an experience with farming back in Michigan where she'd grown up. Excuse me. And then she wanted to be a farmer and she wanted to write. So she and her husband, Charles Rawlings, went there and bought the farm together. And they tried very hard to make it work as an orange grove. They hired people to help them because they didn't know anything about an orange grove. But I should say here that the movie that was made in the 80s with Mary Steenburgen playing Marjorie sort of acted like that her husband was, an aristocrat, or she was from a very, very wealthy background and she didn't know anything about farming. And that really wasn't true. It fit in better with the image they would. I don't know why they did that. But she really did have experience working on farms, but it didn't work out with her husband. He tried, but they were divorced about 5 years later, and he left. But you can visit this wonderful farm today. It's very much as she left it. It's really like a time capsule of the 1930s. Her tableware is still there. Her bathroom is there. Her quilt is on her bed. I just loved it. I thought it was a portal, a time portal.
Yeah, I mean, the most glowing reviews I've ever heard from her. Where is it again?
It's outside of Gainesville, I guess is the easy. It's in the Ocala National Forest now.
She was kind of this larger than life figure as well. As you tell us in the podcast, she liked to drink. She wasn't bashful about getting into loud arguments with her husband in front of people. Tell me a little about her. Does she seem like somebody that you would get along with today? Because I just kept thinking about how, like, I think I could hang out with her.
Well, you'd have to like to drink, you know, and not take offense. I think a lot of people said that, you know, she was really very authentic. When she was writing that book on moonshine, that was her first book. She went and lived with a family to learn about moonshine. She would catch flounders with her bare hands. She used her bathing cap to help her. So she was really a person who you had to really appreciate who she was, I think, if you're going to hang out with her. There's a famous story about how she liked to drink. And when after she left Cross Creek, she didn't actually leave it, but she also bought a house on the beach in Crescent Beach near St. Augustine. She was hanging out in a bar in town in St. Augustine, and she thought she saw Hemingway. And she sent him a note, and she said, "Are you Hemingway?" And he wrote back, and he said, "Only if you're Rawlings." So she really got to know a lot of people, famous celebrities. Zora Neale Hurston visited, which was very radical at that time. And supposedly Dylan Thomas made his way there, and Robert Frost. So a lot of people liked her. She was a lot of fun, to answer your question.
Yeah. I'm wondering if researching Rawlings was maybe a little easier than some of the other women that you've highlighted in other episodes, just because of how well known she is compared to maybe some of the lesser known women that you feature.
Well, that's true. But in a way, I watched the film Cross Creek, but I actually had to do, you know, figure out what was truth and what was fiction. So in a way, it was harder. I did look at her wonderful cookbook, which I think Blair appreciated that cookbook too. She wrote a cookbook called Cross Creek about recipes that she tried out while she was at the Crescent Beach house.
It's so funny because it's just like, it's like, add a pound of lard, add a pound of butter. It's like, if you, it's a dream cookbook, really. But
high cholesterol.
Yeah. But the other thing that's really cool about it is that it's filled with like personal anecdotes and stories. And it really is more like a read.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. People know that cookbook, not so much for its recipes, but for the story she tells about Florida, about the 1930s Florida.
All right. Well, I think that makes it, when you were talking about the difficulty maybe sometimes parsing fact from fiction, that segues nicely into the next woman I wanted to talk about from the podcast, Lucia Pamela. And Blair, I'm going to let you just tell us a little bit about her, because this seems to be like a selection that you chose.
Oh, yes. Yes, it was. I don't know. You know, I found Lucia Pamela, and I felt like I'd finally found the idol I've been searching for my whole life. So a little background on Lucia. The most important thing is that she, nothing really adds up. she claims that she was a musical prodigy who memorized over 7,000 songs, and that she played every instrument, and that she even toured with Beethoven's nephew, I think it was.
Cousin.
But unfortunately, even though she tells us that the reason she's such a good pianist, although no photos of her playing the piano exist, was that all of her fingers melted together when she was a child. But the problem with that is that her fingers look totally normal, and also the only photos of her exist performing, she's playing the accordion.
And her fingers are fine.
So things just don't add up, unfortunately, but regardless, she's a complete icon. And so after she... Where was I? Oh, yeah. So she was in a bunch of bands. And then the most important thing about Lucia, though, is that when she was in her mid-60s and working as a Mother Goose-type character at Storyland in Fresno, California, she built a... I love that part, too. And, like, I love that part. This was after her job performing at the Moonlight Drive-In.
We have to talk about the moon.
Well, I'm getting to the moon.
Okay, sorry. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so she built a spaceship in her backyard, and I just want to make it clear this was before Neil Armstrong. And she built a spaceship. She went to the moon, and while she was on the moon, she recorded her album. And another thing, just in her defense, she wanted us all to know that her voice sounds different because of the atmosphere up there, but in reality, it's because whoever was like recording it for her like pressed the wrong button, so her voice sounds so weird. And she sings these songs about like being on the moon and
in the year 2000
and how cool it is, but she's always reminding you you're on the moon. Like, it'll be a song about love and she'll be like, "Ooh, we're on the moon," and it's amazing.
Oh, and that was her only album that she put out, I guess, in the late 60s. What was her problem with Venus? She didn't want to record on Venus, I understand.
Oh, yeah, because it was something like that. It was like the atmosphere there was a little different, so she decided to just stay in the moon area. But also, I don't know if the people of Nutland, oh, by the way, that's the city on the moon.
The capital of the moon.
Duh. I don't know if they would have let her leave if she was their queen.
We put a sample of our favorite song on the website in the year 2000. Do you want to sing it?
Do you want to sing it? You seem to really want to sing it, Mommy. You seem to... Okay, I'll do it.
Cut that out. Okay.
In the year 2000, that's where I'll be... Her voice wavers like that, too.
Because she's on the moon.
She is. Sorry, we're so excited. We just have had such little social interaction over the past couple weeks. We sound a little crazy.
Okay, let's move on.
Well, how was that album received initially?
Well, it wasn't. Actually, you know, it's interesting. Weird. This is actually a Florida connection. It was actually printed by this label that was in Hollywood, Florida. And so this random label that I tried to find stuff on them. But there was this label in Hollywood, Florida that pressed like 500 copies, I want to say, and she paid for them all. Like, she didn't really ever have a record label, though what's interesting is that she did try to write Columbia on some of them. So she made... Oh, I love her so much. So there was 500 albums made. They're actually collector's items now, but no one cared. And then because no one cared, she tried to make a coloring book for people to write in, because obviously that's like, when people aren't interested in your album, you should definitely make an interactive coloring book.
Yeah, that's the next natural step, obviously.
I know! But yet, for some reason, nobody wrote in.
The album did enjoy some resurgent popularity, though, like in the 1990s, I understand.
Yeah, because the guy on WFMU, which is that amazing radio station out of New Jersey, he found it, and I can't pronounce his last name right, but I do in the podcast. But he's responsible for finding so much amazing music and like making like Jandek and the Shags and like all kind of the like people that I don't know I love that I never would have found like to popular taste, I think.
And she, tell me about her dream project later in life, because she never really kind of gave up that fascination with, you know, the moon and space travel, did she?
Oh, are you referring to her theme park where it would all be about going to the moon and a recount of her fateful trip?
That would be the one. Did that ever come to any sort of fruition before she died?
You may be surprised to find out it did not.
Okay. All right. Well, the March episode of the Cool Dead Women podcast features Jeanette Rankin, the first woman in Congress. And she was elected to Congress actually before all women in the country even had the right to vote. That's because the 19th Amendment wasn't ratified until several years after she was in Congress.
That's right, because the states were allowing women to vote, but it hadn't yet been ratified by enough states so that it was actually an amendment. And so she got to Congress as a representative from Missouri. She was a Republican candidate from Missouri, and she got there, and she was actually voted for all the women to vote. So it's really a remarkable position that she found herself in.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been amazing. I think perhaps... her vote that maybe got her into some trouble was voting in opposition to declaring war against Germany leading up to World War II. And I thought it was so odd. You talk about her in the podcast being singled out for criticism for casting that vote against the war declaration. But she was hardly the only one who voted against the war.
No, actually, World War II, she cast the lone vote against entry into World War II. She also had the bad luck to be there, be in Congress during World War I. And there were other people who voted against entry into that war. But she really suffered from the World War II no vote because of Pearl Harbor. I mean, the country really wanted to go to war. And she found herself, she had to hide in a telephone booth. Blair, have you ever seen a telephone booth?
No.
We were talking.
I haven't, like, TV shows. Like, my favorite TV show has a telephone booth in it. But, like, no, I've never actually seen one, which is really weird.
Isn't that interesting? So, Jeanette Rankin.
In London. Yeah.
Jeanette Rankin hid in a telephone booth, and she had to be escorted around by the police, and she endured really a lot of hostility from her colleagues for the rest of her time in Congress, and she didn't get reelected, obviously. But I thought she's remarkable because her life took her to the Vietnam War, where she protested and she got a lot of women together. The phrase "sisterhood is powerful" actually comes from a march that she organized. So she was a lifelong advocate for pacifism, really, in her case.
Yeah, speaking of, you know, pacifism, I understand she also studied the teachings of Mahatma Gandhi, traveled a bit to India.
Yes, but she never got to see him. She was very disappointed. I think she took 7 trips. That's a lot in those days.
Well, and another interesting link between her and the podcast itself is it concerns Rankin going to New York for the launch of Ms. Magazine, which, of course, you know, this very podcast was highlighted on the Ms. Magazine blog a couple years ago. So that's got to have some interesting significance for you two.
Yes, it does, and we're glad to know that Ms. had such an illustrious history too. With so many, it really does.
And that it's still around, especially after so many print magazines have died. It's really nice that one still exists.
Yeah. John, did you want to talk about Edna St. Vincent Millay's connection to Florida?
I do. First of all, tell us a little bit about who she was. I know she was a poet and a playwright. And honestly, before listening to your podcast episode about her, the only thing I really knew was her poem, Figs from Thistles, First Fig.
Yeah. That's interesting you should say that because, you know, she was a rock star of a poet in the 20s and 30s. And people kind of identify her as this Victorian poetess. But that wasn't true. Nothing could be further from the truth. She was really kind of a wild woman. She was known for her sexual activities.
Oh, God.
What?
Just go on.
She had an island in Maine where she said no swimsuits allowed, which was very radical. But she had a Florida connection, which interested me in that when she got rich, and she did, she got very rich because she went on these speaking tours when she would read her poetry, and she really identified with the audience, and so she made a lot of money. She started going to warm places in the winter, and she went to the Virgin Islands, and she went to Delray Beach. Because a lot of apparently cartoonists and reporters and writers were going there in the 1920s, and she hung out in this place called the Arcade. And when I went to visit it, there's actually a room there. And they said to me, "Would you like to see the speakeasy?" And I said, "Well, yeah, of course." And they pulled they pulled back this red velvet curtain, and there was a bar that had been there, from Edna's time. And it was really, I mean, I was, talk about a time portal, going back in time.
And that was super recently, and people can still go there, right?
Yes, yeah. As far as I know, you can still go there. That was when, just a few years ago. The other thing was that she went to Sanibel. She also spent time at Sanibel at a hotel there, and that was called the Sanibel Palms Hotel. She and her husband went there, and they put their belongings down, their suitcases down, and a collection of poems that she was just about finished. I think she had finished it. They took a walk, and they turned around, they looked back at the hotel, and it was on fire. And she lost everything, including the collection of poems. But apparently, Yeah. She shows up, you know, in a novel. This whole episode shows up in a novel by Randy Wainwright called Dark Light. He writes about that. But she somehow, somehow she amazingly was able to recreate the entire book of poems. She was so upset, by the way, after this whole thing with the fire that she wrote to a friend, "Oh, Florida, oh, Florida, could any state be more horrida?"
Well, and there was another point in her life where she was actually being, she was under FBI surveillance. They had a pretty big dossier on her. Tell us a bit about that background and why the FBI would have been interested.
Well, the FBI was investigating everybody at that time. I mean, writers and I think actors and filmmakers and everybody. They focused in on her particularly. I don't know. She was very outspoken. Maybe that was the reason.
And on the end of the 90-page dossier on her.
She knew about it. It wasn't like it was a surprise. She started leaving calling cards for the people who followed her, kind of being sardonic.
Right. Like, I know you're watching me.
I know, right?
That's great. Well, that is actually about all the time we have for today's show. But I want to thank my guests. We've been speaking with author, editor, professor, and historian Dr. Erica Waters, along with her daughter, filmmaker, music journalist, and musician Blair Waters. They're the hosts and producers of the podcast Cool Dead Women, available through Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can also check out more about the podcast online at cooldeadwomen.com. Erica and Blair, thanks so much for taking the time to be with me today. I hope we can do it again in the future.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, this was great.
If you missed any of today's show, you can always hear episodes in their entirety on our website, wgcu.org/GCL, or you can subscribe to our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by yours truly. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.
As I was walking on the moon, I met a little cow, and this is what she said to me. As I was walking on the moon, I met a little chickadee, and this is what she said to me. Da 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 bum 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 bum